Hello, my name is Michael Wood, lead pastor at First West. I'm thankful you've joined us today. At First West, our vision is to see people changed by the gospel and living out their Christ-centered purpose. I hope today's sermon will challenge your heart and drive you to dive deeper into your purpose created by God. If you have questions about our church, reach out to us by visiting our website, firstwest.cc.
We spent the last couple weeks across our campuses walking through this idea of God because of who He is, and us because of who we are prone to be. We're called to walk not in fear, but to walk in courage. And so what we have seen is that God has a track record of being trustworthy time and time again, and that we have a default mechanism to walk in fear. That's our default, time and time again. And yet God has called us not to be so much fixated on what we feel, but on who He is. So as we walk in courage, we're going to be looking at this thing of what it looks like to be a royal mess. Mainly, what does it look like when we make a royal mess of our lives because we get what we wanted? Okay. Now, this weekend was a special weekend for a lot of reasons. For a lot of you, it represented an end of school year and a start of summer. So for many of you, you longed for that day to come. For many of you, you work in school in a classroom or administration, and you have really yearned for that day to come. Or maybe it's been just the whole idea of weather changes and being out in the yard and just the sweat that comes there or whatever that looks like. But there were a lot of things. But one of the things that I couldn't escape that there were a lot of people that were just giddy about was this whole idea. There was a wedding that took place this weekend. We're talking, of course, about the royal wedding. All right. I think we have a pic of it right there. Now, all throughout the week, both here at the church, when I'd be running errands, there are people, both people I had a relationship with and people that I did not know at all, that would ask me questions like, hey, are you going to watch the royal wedding? Are you going to wake up at 3 a.m. and watch that? And I looked at them and I said, no. But I have a very spiritual reason for that. And somebody was like, oh, is it because you're preaching Sunday? I said, no, my reason is I have no desire to. Like none. Zero. All right. Now, that doesn't mean I don't love weddings. I loved mine. It was great. It was just one of those things to where I knew for me that it just wasn't going to impact what I had to do the rest of the weekend and the week out, but I couldn't escape it. And so here's what, again, without trying to track with this, just I'd happen to walk through a room and hear something, or I'd see something on social media, or I'd go and pick something up, and somebody would be like, hey, did you know? And here's what I found out about the royal wedding, okay? So if you need a cheat sheet, here are the takeaways I got. Meghan Markle had two different dresses. She had one that was a little bit more elegant that she wore for the wedding ceremony, and then she had like a costume change for the after party that was a little bit more flexible and could let her celebrate, okay? Prince Harry did not shave for the wedding. Now, for some people, they were like, hey, that's awesome. And some people were appalled. They were like, that's what's wrong with this world. He didn't even shave for his own wedding. But millions and millions of people kind of watched onto this. And here's why I think it made it so intriguing. Not only was it a royal wedding, but Meghan Markle, there in the white, her upbringing was probably a little bit more like what you and I live day to day. She wasn't royalty. It was not a foregone conclusion. And so there's a little bit of sense that we watch and go, man, somebody, now she obviously is a famous actress and she does all that, but the idea that somebody who didn't grow up in a castle could somehow magically have their life changed, she is now royalty, that's intriguing to us. Now, for some of us, we're like, hey, man, you just told me, you spent about 30 seconds talking about the royal wedding. That's about 31 seconds more than I wanted to think about it. But think about this idea of royalty. Think about 10 years ago when you or someone that you knew first got this mysterious email from a Nigerian prince that somehow in all the world found your email address and just said, look, man, help me out. I have billions of dollars, and I really just want to give it away. I just need for you to send me like $10,000, all right? Now, we know today that's a scam, but there's that part when that first came out that there's a part of people that thought, man, what if it's true? I mean, if I could just give $10,000 and get a billion, I'm not great with math, but that'd be pretty awesome. Or maybe it's even this. Maybe if you are a girl in the room or you've got a daughter or a granddaughter, the idea that lots of girls love to play dress up and be Cinderella and Snow White or Princess Anna, just the idea that maybe one day they could be royalty. And why do I tell you that? Because today what we're going to look at in the book of 1 Samuel and chapter 8 is this idea of being intrigued by royalty. And what we see here is the story of God's people, the Israelite nation. And God has called them and He's promised them who He is going to be. He has shown a proven track record and said, look, I am who I say I am and you get to be who I say that you are. And what happens is, over time, they begin to desire not just to be led, they want a king. They want a physical person to represent their nation. And they go to their leader and they go to their setup and they make their case. And he looks at him and goes, hey, I know what it is that you think you're saying. I don't think you understand all that comes with that. So let me just kind of unpack that so that you can read the fine print and we can just be on the same page about what you're really asking for. And as that happens, the people begin to go, hey, thanks for all that information. We still want to move forward. And we're going to look at that idea. And what we're going to see in 1 Samuel chapter 8 is this idea. That this is, and here's my desire for myself as we've prepared for this and for us across all three campuses this morning. That we would resist the temptation to go, man, that is a distant story that other people did. And we're going to kind of peek in to what they did. But realize as we look at Israel, we're going to find out that that is not only a snapshot of who they were in their hearts, but in reality, it's a snapshot of my heart and your heart this morning on a daily basis. That we will wrestle with these ideas about what we want and who's going to be in charge. And here's what we're going to find out to be true in our lives and true for the Israelite nation. That trusting in counterfeit kings is costly and it leaves me unfulfilled. We're going to see that trusting in counterfeit kings is costly and it ultimately leaves you and I unfulfilled. And so God's word is going to walk us through that this morning. But again, please resist the temptation that we all have when we look at scripture to go, man, look at them when God might say this morning, hey, look at your own heart and see maybe if it's not this chasm difference between the Israelite nation and you, but if God might go, man, it's more like, because what it's revealed to me as we prepared for this is, God said, hey, this story is just a mirror. To when you look at it, that is reflective of who you are left to your own mark and your default. So as we dive in, here's what we're going to see first and foremost. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, we're going to see this, that my deepest desires steer my decisions. My deepest desires steer my decisions. Now, some of you are like, seriously? I got up and drank coffee and shaved my legs for that. That what I want to do, I end up doing. Awesome, right? What we're going to see is that there are things that we know we are our deepest desires, and there's also things in our lives that we don't really realize are our deepest desire. We wouldn't pinpoint them, but if we put it under a microscope, we go, man, that's a driving desire. So here's what we see, 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 1 through 5. It says, when Samuel grew old, he appointed his sons as judges over Israel. His firstborn son's name was Joel, and his second son was Abijah. They were judges in Beersheba. However, his sons did not walk in his ways. They turned towards dishonest profit, took bribes, and perverted justice. So all the elders of Israel gathered together and went to Samuel at Ramah. And they said to him, look, you are old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Therefore, appoint a king to judge us the same as all the other nations have. Couple things I want you to see this morning and not to miss. When they're coming in, they don't come in and go, hey, look, man, we get it. God's got a plan and stuff. Just here's a thought, just one of those things, kind of a structural basis. Let's go down here. They're basically going in. They say, hey, Samuel, look, man, you're old, all right? And your sons don't walk like you. And we don't really like where this is going, and there needs to be a change. Now, I want you to understand something. It says this in verse 4. It says, so the elders of Israel gathered together. Here's what it doesn't say. A couple of guys who were like 12 and 16 who were bored was like, this is dumb. We should have some new rules, all right? These are the elders. These are leaders. These are people that have lived seasons of life. They've been trusted to lead. And yet what they do in this moment is they begin to move from what they know to be true and what they have seen to be true about God. And they begin to operate on what they think and how they feel. And that begins grabbing the steering wheel. And they go to him. And what we're going to point out may seem subtle at difference, but it's a subtle drift that always kills us. And here's what happens. They go to him and they say, look, you're old and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now, we could look at that and go, man, Samuel walked with God. His sons didn't. So they would go, man, we really want somebody with integrity and character and your sons don't have that. And that would be a fair and an appropriate thing to thumbs up, an appropriate thing to boo. But I want you to catch something. Here's what they don't say. They don't say, Samuel, your sons, they don't walk in the way that God has called them. They say they don't walk like you. Now, Samuel was an upstanding, righteous man who walked with God, but he wasn't perfect. And what happens for Israel in this moment and can happen to us is we can begin to go with what makes sense to my mind and my planning and what I prefer and lean into that and to go, well, hey, man, they're not like you. Therefore, they need to go. When God would say, hey, when did I call Israel to be like Samuel? Never. He called Samuel to lead them, but God calls us to what? To be like him. So it's just a real subtle drift. Well, they're not like you, Samuel. But Samuel's not the standard. God is. But there's a second thing that they say when they give reason for it. They say, therefore, appoint a king to judge us the same as all the other nations have. What are they doing? They're looking around and going, what do they have? What do they do? We need to be like them. And yet what God has called them to from the get-go is he said, hey, look, you will be my people and I will be your God. And you will be greater than all other nations. They're not yearning and striving and going, hey, we want to be the greatest nation. They're just content to go, we just want to be just as good as them, and then we want to be like them, and they settle. And what I've found as we studied and prepped and prayed for this is going, man, is that not just a picture of us? That sometimes we long for great things, but we just would settle for, if I could just be like this family, if we could just have this going on, and God, I know you call us to great things, but I'll be okay with just okay things. We'll settle. And here's what we find out about Israel, and to be true about us, is that while we have the deep desire to take part, God's call in our lives is to be set apart, which means that most of the time, what we see happening to the right and to the left and behind us, it's going to be different. And there's something within us that goes, I just want to be like them. And God goes, I don't want you to just be like that. I don't want you to settle. But in order to take you to places that they're not going to go, I'm probably going to have to take you down some paths that they're not going to walk. And what we begin to see is that they have a short-sightedness about their future. They just want to be able to go, we got to be as good as them and in them, and that's good enough. And God goes, my call for you is not to be the same as other nations. It's to be greater. Not because you're special, but because my presence with you makes you special. So they settle for that. And we begin to see that their deepest desires grab the steering wheel of their life. Now, here's what that looks like. We're in a season right now where we've had preschool graduations and middle school war banquets and high school graduations and college graduations. And for a lot of us, we have run all over the parish. And here's what I know to be true. There are things that you and I have in our life that we value. But there's also things that we have that we value greater. For example, if you play golf in the room, you love to do that. But I'm pretty sure you didn't look at your wife or your son or daughter and be like, hey, look, I'm really glad that you're graduating, but I've got a tea time. So like, look, high five and we'll go eat later. No, what did you do? You said, I'm going to put this desire on the back seat because my deeper desire is to be present at this award ceremony or at this accomplishment. Well, what does that mean for our lives? That means that ultimately for us, we tend to give ourselves a pass and we go, well, I don't really want that. And we end up doing what we ultimately want to do most of the time. And what we see happening here is Israel, who didn't say, we don't care anything about God. They didn't say, well, God's nothing to us. What they said was, no, we value God. We just have a greater value that we want to put on top. And so our deepest desires will always grab the steering wheel. And when we ask the question, well, how did this get a hold of the steering wheel? It always goes back to our heart. And we see that. Second thing we see is this, is that you and I'm prone to trust counterfeit kings. This is true of the nation of Israel. It's true of myself. It's true of you in the room, that we are prone to trust and counterfeit kings. Listen to what it says in verse 6, 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 6. When they said, give us a king to judge us, Samuel considered their demand wrong, so he prayed to the Lord. But the Lord told him, listen to the people and everything they say to you. They have not rejected you. They have rejected me as their king. They are doing the same thing to you that they have done to me since the day I brought them out of Egypt until this day, abandoning me and worshiping other gods. Listen to them, but solemnly warn them and tell them about the customary rights of the king who will reign over them. See, what we begin to see in Samuel is what's true of us, that initially Samuel, he walks with God, he is for the things of God, but when they reject the system that's in, kind of the initial reaction is like, hey, God, you put me in charge, and these people don't want to listen, and it's frustrating to me. And I believe a principle that's true in all of life and that God would echo this morning is that leadership is taking things very serious, but not always taking it personally. Initially, Samuel was more put out by what they're doing. Hey, God, they're rejecting me. You gave me the badge. I'm the sheriff, right? You told me to be in charge, and they want something else. And God kind of calms him down and says, let's walk it back. They're not just rejecting you. They're rejecting me. They're not rejecting the system that's in place. They're objecting to the one who put this system in place. And he says, look, man, this isn't a new thing. They have done this time and time again. I brought them out of slavery. And when we go in the wilderness and they say, oh, there's an ocean here, an army. At least if we had died there, we could, this is horrible. We could at least have a tombstone where we were going. And God shows up and parts the Red Sea and delivers them from one of the most fierce armies. And they're walking in the wilderness. And God goes, hey, you need food? I'll bring you manna from heaven. I literally will drop it from the sky. And a short season of time goes by, and everybody's like, too many carbs, right? Don't have enough protein to do that. And God's like, yo, you need some meat? I'll give you some quail. Like, he'll provide for them. He leads by a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. And he goes, look, I'm here for you. I'm going to do this. And what happens? There's a propensity to reject God and to settle for a counterfeit thing. Here's what you need to know, that throughout Scripture, we see this happening before this is happening. We see later on in Scripture, in the Psalms, we reflect back, and this is referenced. We see in Romans, in the New Testament, they go, the human heart hasn't changed. We're prone to trust counterfeit kings. Listen to this in Romans chapter 1. It says, For though they knew God, they did not glorify him as God or show him gratitude. Instead, their thinking became worthless, and their senseless hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of God for immortal gods, for images resembling mortal man, birds, four-footed animals, and reptiles. Therefore, God delivered them over into the desires of their hearts to sexual impurity, so that their bodies were degraded among themselves. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshiped and served what has been created instead of the Creator, who is praised forever. What's happening? The human heart hasn't changed. It doesn't change from the Old Testament to the New Testament. It doesn't change today. We have this need to be in control. We have this need to drift and to settle for lesser things. And to go, hey, if it's not the worst thing in the world, surely it's okay. And God goes, I didn't call you for okay or for just better. I have called you to be my people. And a reflection of God's heart is that he doesn't want you to settle for less than what he has called you to. Goes on in Psalms 81, reflecting back to this very time in the Israelite nation. Psalms 81, verse 10, it says this. It says, I am the Lord your God who brought you up from the land of Egypt. Open your mouths wide and I will fill it. But my people did not listen to my voice. Israel did not obey me. So I gave them over to their own stubborn hearts to follow their own plans. You know, we see things like that sometimes and we go, but God's good. Why would he do that? Because God, in his love for us and his desire for us, not just to survive today, but to flourish, is God wants us to be able to trust him, not just in a moment, but on a continual basis of moments. One of the things that I just, in my mind and heart, that I just see is these parallels are the Christian life, ministry, coaching, parenting. There's a lot of similarities. They're both 24-hour a day, and they are full contact sports. And you may or may not know this, but when you get to the high school age, sometimes between the ages of 10 and 19, students or athletes, they will develop not only a mind of their own, they will be just convinced of things. I was watching a high school basketball game in Baton Rouge years ago from an incredible coach. This guy had sent players to the NBA, and he was coaching at one of the local high schools, and he had a player that was a pretty good defensive player. Only problem was she always found herself in foul trouble. She would reach and slap and do this, and she almost every game she would foul out, and he would plead with her. He's like, look, will you just do this? Will you adjust this way? And nothing would get through. So he has the idea that he will take his best defender, and he won't start her. So other players start in the first quarter, during like the first break, he puts her in to play. And she picks up her first foul and her second and her third. I'll fast forward. In 2 minutes and 42 seconds, she fouled out of the game. And she's looking at him like, what did you do? And he just looked at her and he said, what did you do? And she's like, I fouled out. I can't. He said, well, go sit down. He said, I need you to understand that your way, what makes sense to you, like this is the result. And I need you to understand that it can't keep happening this way. Now, that girl's parents thought he was a jerk, but here's what you need to know. In that moment, he said, I'm trying to teach you in this moment, and I'm trying to teach you ahead for this season. Actually, his desire was, look, it's going to affect her basketball-wise. This will affect her the rest of her life, either doing it her way and being right or understanding I get to choose what I'm going to do, but I don't get to choose the repercussions because we will settle in a heartbeat for counterfeit kings. So check this out. Because we settle for counterfeit kings, why is that a big deal? Is there a cost that comes with that? Well, there's a huge cost, and we're going to see that play out in this next passage of Scripture, and it's going to drive home this point that kingship always has a cost. 10 out of 10 times, without exception, kingship always has a cost. There's no way around it. Here's what we see in chapter 8, verses 10 through 18, that kingship always has a cost. Samuel told all the Lord's words to the people who were asking him for a king. He said, these are the rights of the king who will reign over you. So what Samuel's doing, he talks to God and says, what's going to happen? And so this is the fine print. Samuel goes, hey, look, you're asking. I just want to make crystal clear that we're on the same page about what you're asking for. Here's what accompanies that, okay? You don't get to pick, you know, like it's a combo meal and you can't separate it. This is what you're asking for. He said, these are the rights of the king who will reign over you. Not the tyrant, just what the king is going to do. This is what he is perfectly in his power to do and can be expected of him. He will take your sons and put them to his use in his chariots, on his horses, or running in front of his chariots. He can appoint them for his use as commanders of thousands or commanders of fifties, to plow his ground and to reap his harvest, or to make his weapons of war and the equipment for his chariots. He can take your daughters to become perfumers, cooks, and bakers. He can take your best fields, your vineyards, and olive orchards and give them to his servants. He can take a tenth of your grain and your vineyards and give them to his officials and servants. He can take your male servants, your female servants, your best young men and your donkeys and use them for his work. He can take a tenth of your flocks and you yourselves can become his servants. When that day comes, you will cry out because of the king you've chosen for yourselves, but the Lord won't answer you on that day. He's making it crystal clear. He's saying, hey, do you understand this? That the nature of kingdoms is this. Kings rule kingdoms. It's how that works. Whoever the king is, he gets to call all the shots. Everything about your family, your finances, the influence that you have, all of it belongs to the king. He can do whatever he wants with it. And he will. And he lays that out crystal clear for him. Hey, this is going to affect your family. It's going to affect your livelihood. It's going to affect your sweat equity. It's going to affect the sorrow of your heart. Everything that you have that's been entrusted to you, who you place as king will always rule all those things. And as we see that, there's a part of me as I read this, and there's a part of you that as you're hearing this story that's going, how in the world, like they have two choices. Surely they can't screw this up. And yet somehow the elders of Israel, after hearing all that, are like, yes, I'll take all things, pain and suffering for 1,000, Alex. That sounds great. Sign us up. What's happening? In here, the desire for them to be in control, to have what they want, to allow not what they know to be true, what they've seen to be true, but to allow what they feel in that moment. You know, one of the things that we know in life is that feelings don't always make things real, but they make the feelings real. A lot of times we find ourselves feeling and not thinking, okay? But in this moment, there's this idea of settling for a counterfeit king. And the reason that is so costly is because whoever has the king has the kingdom every time. Now, for the Israelites, it's a physical person. For you and I, it may look different. Like, we don't really want somebody to come up and put a crown and a scepter on them. But here's what the reality happens. There are things that we will settle for, counterfeit kings, that don't appear just to be evil and outright wrong. They're good things. They're just not what God's called us to. And so we find ourselves being slave and being driven by things like my career. And I got to put in the hours and do this. I read an article with a guy that said, hey, man, the guy that's in your life that's telling you to work 80 hours a week, he's not giving you advice on how to build a career. He's giving you advice on how to get a divorce. That's what's happening. Because if your job is your king, guess what will fall subject to it? Everything in your life. If your job is your reputation or your next move, or even if it's your kids, who, yes, God has entrusted to us, that we're supposed to raise them and have them flourish and be leaders for him. But they're not supposed to be our ultimate goal. God's glory is. And as we begin to substitute those things, we will find out, again, the hands that grab the steering wheel are all driven by what our heart desires the deepest. And we'll settle for that counterfeit king, and it'll cost us everything, every single time. But do you see this picture? God is painting this picture for me going, the king gets the kingdom, and really you have two choices. You have God, the one true king with a capital K, and guess what he'll do? He'll demand everything from you. He'll your family and your finances, and he'll ask you for those same things, but he'll say, here's the end result. I'll be your God. I will go before you. I will fight for you, and not only will I save you, I, through your lineage, through your bloodline, I'll provide salvation for the world. So it's going to cost you everything, but you get everything. And yet a substitute king says this, hey, I'm going to take everything from you. And at the end, guess what you get? Nothing. You just helped me move this much further. And that's true for the Israelites. And yet it's true for us in every situation as we wrestle with this idea of the counterfeit king or the one truth king. It's going to cost us all either way. One of it comes with God saying, you get to be part of my kingdom forever and what I'm doing and the salvation of many, or you just get to get used up, burned out, and thrown to the trash. And so this discrepancy, this difference is painted. And yet, here's what we're going to see happen. That not only Not only do our deepest desires grab the steering wheel, not only are we prone to trust in counterfeit kings, not only that kingship has a huge cost every single time, but that counterfeit kings ultimately leave me unfulfilled. That's what it says in verse 19. It says, the people refused to listen to Samuel. No, they said, we must have a king over us. Then, seeing a pattern, then we'll be like all the other nations. Our king will judge us, he'll go out before us, and he will fight our battles. Samuel listened to all the people's words, then he repeated them to the Lord. Listen to them, he told Samuel. The Lord told Samuel. Appoint a king for them. Then Samuel told the men of Israel, each of you go back to your city. What happens in this situation? They articulate their request, and they have in their minds, here's some reasons that we thought of why this would make sense. And the reality is the way you and I are wired, when we make up our mind to do something, we'll just reach for a couple of reasons. They don't have to be good reasons, but really, once we've made up our mind, we're not looking for things to help steer us. We're just looking for things to justify decisions that we've made. So, well, somebody, another place did it, so it's okay, or it's not as bad as this person. Whatever it is, reasons get attached to it. It's like, hey, the decision was already made, right? They leave you unfulfilled. And so what God says in this moment is, hey, Samuel, they said what they wanted. And we show them, hey, what you're asking for really looks like this, just to be clear. And yet in that moment, they said, yeah, that's exactly what we want. And God, in his love and his desire for us not just to succeed in the day, but ultimately learn to trust him with everything, steps back and says, fine, give them what they want. Those of you who are married in the room, perhaps you find yourself on occasion having a discussion with your spouse and a decision has to be made and you kind of go, well, I really think we could do this and this, it will look like this and this is what we should do. And then your wife says, well, I really think we should not do those things and maybe do this, this, and this. And so you begin to debate back and forth and you're telling all the reasons why you're right and all this. And your wife finally says the words you were hoping for. Fine. Now here's what you need to know. And if you're not married, guys, let me just give you some advice. When your wife says fine, when you're young and dumb, you hear, you're right, you win. When you're smart, you realize, oops, this is bad. Because she just said fine. What she was saying is, oh, really? Okay, you want to be the bus driver? Cool. Here's the keys. When you get it, when you pull it into the ditch and you wreck it, let me know. That's what God's doing right here. He's saying, hey, I'm asking you to trust me. You're looking at the evidence, and yet somehow you're going, I'm looking at everything, I still don't land there. And then God they reason and goes, hey, let's just be clear. Let's look, let's think this through. Let's evaluate each step and cost and go, is this worth it? And the conclusion is, yes, we want a king. And so what God is doing right here is what he does with us a lot of time. God, through his desire for us to know and to trust him, says, hey, you think this path right here, you think that'll make you happy? Tell you what, man, you just run that road as long and as far as you can, and eventually you'll come to the conclusion that I've been pleading you with the whole time. This road will not result in your happiness. What does God do sometimes? He allows us to run that road till we're convinced. We try it, we find out, I just got everything that I wanted, and I'm empty and I'm unfulfilled. We're camped out in 1 Samuel chapter 8, but if you look back in chapter 7, there's just stories of God showing through time and time again and this victory that the Israelites have over the Philistines time and time again. They build an altar called the Ebenezer, and they say this in 1 Samuel chapter 7, verse 12. They build this altar, and they say, because we want to declare, till now the Lord has helped us. They're saying, look, every single time we've asked God to show up and to be who he said he would be, he's done it. We're going to build that altar. And yet, we know that there's a passage of time between this altar, this Ebenezer being built, into this conversation. What happens? In this passage of time, we see things happen where people act like people. Sometimes they get it right, sometimes they get it wrong. But what happens is this series of what God's people see happening, what they know to be true, what they've either seen firsthand or heard the stories of God's faithfulness, they have a value to it. It just gets put on this shelf, and they go, my feelings, that's going to be on top. What I see that country doing in that country, that's what we want. And what I can't for the life of me understand as we read this, This is what it looks like to me. It looks like in the NBA conference finals, the Cleveland Cavs are down 2 points and there's 8 seconds left. And they call this really long timeout. And some assistant coach goes, look, guys, I know everybody's got touchy-feeling emotions these days. Here's the research. Almost every time we give this ball to this guy named LeBron, he puts it in the basket. It's amazing. We win. It works out. It happened here, happened here, happened here, happened last game, happened this game. Like, the evidence all shows we give the ball to LeBron, good things happen. And it would almost be if, like, there's another coach that said, hey, great point. You know what we really ought to do? If there's a fat, bald guy that can take the last shot, where's Mark Cole? Let's give him the ball, because somehow, here's what they would be doing. Even though time and time again LeBron has done this, we're going to have great faith. It's just going to be misplaced. The Israelite nation is taking everything that God has proven to do over and over and over again, and they go, hey, I'm going to trust that God's going to be different from who he has always been, and we're going all in for some man to do what he will never be able to do. It's great faith. It's just greatly misplaced. And as this happens, they're going all in, knowing, hey, this choice, like, you know what this king's going to do. We kind of see a foreshadowing of this choice. In the New Testament, when Jesus is speaking in John chapter 10, he's looking at his people and he said, hey, look, I'm the good shepherd. I come to give you life and life to the fullest. All right, that's an option for you, and I provide that. And he said, but there's also another option that Jesus talks about in John 10. He said, there's the thief. And the thief's guarantee to you, if you go with him, is he will kill you, steal from you, and destroy you. Those are your two options. Life and life to the fullest abundantly, and the thief who is guaranteed to kill, steal, and destroy. And yet, just like in this situation, what Jesus says to people and what God is saying to Israelites is, you have two very different paths here, but you get to choose. God, who is faithful, Jesus, who is life, or the thief who will steal, kill, and destroy, and a lesser king, a substitute king, that will lead to your demise for his benefit. And as this happens, what is the answer? No, give us a king. We want one that will judge us, who goes before us, and who will fight our battles. Yeah, but if you look back and you flip the pages back to the left, what do you see? That this king, Jesus, the one who's in place, has judged them. He's put rules and guidelines and parameters. He has gone before them, cloud by day, fire by night. He has judged them, gone before them, and he's fought their battles time and time again. And yet, what the people say is, we basically want the faithfulness of God, but with somebody we can choose. God, you've done perfectly all those things, but we want somebody else to do it just as well, but it'd be different. God had delivered them. He parted the Red Sea. He was faithful. And again, a lesser king who will lead to your demise, the king who's here. The enemy, the thief who will steal, kill, and destroy, the good shepherd who gives life. We started out, we talked about the royal wedding, a moment in time where Prince Harry and Meghan would say vows, and it was encapsulated by millions and millions and millions on TV. And yet we know this, that in that moment, that was a wedding. And that happened in a set amount of time. But what we really know is that somewhere in the world today, a prince and a princess woke up, paparazzi not around, eyes not watching, and here's how they got to fulfill these vows. They had conversations like, does the fan go on or off? How cold is it in the room? Can the towel go on the floor? Can it go across the counter? Does it have to get hung up? That toilet seat, can it stay down or does it have to go up? Or when the toilet paper roll comes out, does it have to get fully replaced or just set on top? What am I saying? That for them, that wedding was a moment. And each moment of every day that they have left together, they'll make a choice of whether they fulfill and live out those vows. And that's true of that wedding. What's true for us today? That for Israel, it was a moment where they wanted a physical representation of confidence and allegiance. For us, for every person in this room, it goes down to you'll choose a king. And the kingship has a great cost. Matter of fact, it'll cost you and I everything. The question is, when you and I sacrifice everything, what king will it be for? Will it be for one that will go, you advance me and now you're done, you're just burned out, unhappy, and unfulfilled? Or will it be to submit and give everything to the King that goes, hey, it'll cost you everything, but you get to come with me. I offer you my grace, my mercy, my forgiveness, and salvation. Today, and every day moving forward, you and I have a choice for who's King. It affects our salvation. It affects our satisfaction. It affects our sanity. And here's what God says to his Israelite nation. And here's what he says to Reuben, Washita Parish this morning. It's a big deal. Your heart is prone to wonder. My heart and your heart is prone to settle. But wherever we land, kingship is costly. So the question isn't, will things cost my life? It'll cost us everything. The question is, at the end of it, is it burned up and useless that's moved forward to something that's lesser? Or is it for God and his purposes and his kingdom?
Hi, I'm Larry Rollins, the Broaden Horizon student pastor here at First Rest. Thanks so much for watching today's broadcast. If you have questions or want to make a spiritual decision, reach out to us. Call me at our office, 318-322-5104, and ask for me. I would love to connect with you as you process what God is doing in your life. Learn more about First West by visiting our website, firstwest.cc. Again, thanks for watching today.